very much. I appreciate this opportunity to hear to speak with you. I guess I'm the only speaker, so I'm going to have some time for questions this time. My Monday talk, I didn't have any time for questions, so I think I can go a little bit slower this time. But today I want to talk to you a little bit about the identification and characterization of auxin-producing bacteria in the rhizosphere of wheat. That's the title of my presentation. And following individuals, Mohammed Aladani, Roji Manohar, and Shadav Advalkar were all instrumental in producing the data and for this presentation. First of all, you know that auxin was the first plant hormone discovered, and it was discovered a long, long time ago, so there's been a lot of research since then on that particular plant hormone. It was discovered by Darwin, basically, and so that was very interesting history. And so it's since then there's been an awful lot of research, but surprisingly, we still don't know a lot about some aspects of auxin metabolism and things like that. We know that auxins are very critical for the growth and development of plants, and one of the major plant hormones. But within the last 40 years or so, 30, 40 years, it was understood that bacteria produce auxin as well, and other microorganisms, including algae. And as people started to look more closely, they found that many, many organisms produced auxin. So the question was always, well, what is this plant hormone? You know, we always thought it was a plant hormone. What is this plant hormone doing being produced by things like bacteria and other organisms? So we don't quite yet have the answers for that yet, the full answer. We have some ideas. The other aspect of auxin metabolism is that it's produced by multiple biosynthetic pathways. So, for example, plants will utilize one pathway, maybe even multiple pathways, and bacteria will utilize another pathway, typically. But there are always exceptions of it. There are some pathways that are not very well defined either for this plant hormone even today. Auxins are produced by the plant growth promoting rhizobacteria that we've heard about in a number of sessions, so that are supposedly promoting plant growth, but also auxins are produced by a number of pathogens and the deleterious rhizobacteria also. So auxins appear to be almost universal in the microbial world. There are a number of publications where they've actually taken auxin producers and inoculated plants and found a high correlation with the inoculation and the biomass yield. And those are by Khalid et al. 2004 and Ashgar in 2002. So that's an introduction to brief introduction. Okay. The objectives of this research are to, first, we want to determine the association of auxin-producing bacteria with biomass productivity in wheat. So we want to connect those two together. We want to see if we can draw an association with certain auxin-producing bacteria with productivity. And in order to do that, we needed to isolate, identify, and characterize these auxin-producing bacteria from the rhizosphere. So our approach was basically we grew out about 100 wheat plants in these very, very large containers using field soil, okay, and we put one plant per container. Okay, and we did not fertilize the plants. So we grew all these plants in the greenhouse, and then what we did was we harvested the shoot and the roots after about 40 days, and then we categorized them into either high, medium, or low biomass wheat. Okay. We used about 20 representative plants per category, so there was significant amount numbers per category to be representative. And then we extracted the rhizosphere using 100 millimolar sodium pyrophosphate. Here's an example of the shoot weight distribution. It's fairly normal. And so we categorized these 100 plants in either low, medium, and high. The low plants ranged from about 1.2 grams to about 3.8 grams per plant. The medium plants were about 4.1 to 4.8 grams, and then the high were between 5.4 and 7.8. So you can see that there was a wide variation in the amount of auxin produced in these plants. So we have low biomass producing plants, medium and high biomassing plants, and the objective is to draw a correlation between the auxin producers and the biomass production. So what we did, we extracted the rhizosphere, we did our dilution plating, and we did the dilution plating with and without tryptophan in the media. Okay. Then we randomly selected over 1,000 isolates and identified the isolates that produce auxin using a high-throughput auxin screen. And here's an example of a plate, a microtiter plate, 96-well plate. It's an adapted PC method for those who are familiar with the auxin assays. And it's very fast, high throughput, and high specificity. There's an article by Glickman and DeSoth. Basically, they indicated that this method, the PC method, is highly specific for indole acetic acid, but lesser so for indole pyruvic acid, and even less so than for indole acetamide. So, and it was non-specific for tryptophan. Okay, so basically the assay is detecting primarily auxin, but also a number of auxin metabolites as well. So what we did was we incubated the bacteria for 2 days in the media, and with and without tryptophan. And then after that, we performed the PC assay on the supernatants. And we used 3 replicate supernatants with 3 assays per supernatant for a total of 9 measurements, or about, and then we measured the absorbance at 540 nanometers. So the first thing we wanted to do was evaluate the different factors. We did statistical analysis, a 3-factor ANOVA. The 3 factors were biomass production, which was a high, medium, and low. And then the assay, that factor is basically whether or not we added tryptophan to the growth media prior to assay. Okay. And then the other factor was the isolation media. Did we add tryptophan to the isolation media prior to assay? And then we measured the amount of tryptophan. So this analysis of variance tells us, first of all, that auxin production differed significantly with biomass production, with biomass, in other words, high, medium, and low. So it differed significantly among the categories of high, medium, and low biomass, and in fact, highly significantly. Then the second aspect was adding tryptophan to the growth media prior to assay significantly increased the auxin production. That's been shown in a number of studies as well. And then finally, we didn't get any significant effect if we added tryptophan to the isolation media, and did not result in the isolation of auxin producers that produced more or less auxin. So basically, it was interesting. The most interesting part here is the biomass production, that there's a significant effect on the auxin producers, the amount of auxin that they produce with respect to biomass. And that's clearly illustrated in the distributions of the auxin producers. Here we have a histogram basically, where we're looking at the distribution of auxin producers with respect to the total amount that is being produced. In other words, over here, they're the high. These auxin producers are the produce auxin at a very high level, these at a much lower level. Okay, and then this is the number of auxin-producing bacteria within each of these auxin production ranges. So I'll kind of walk you through this because there's a lot of lines here. The dark line here is high biomass producing plants with tryptophan, followed by medium biomass plants without tryptophan, and then low with tryptophan. So here you have the high biomass plants distribution with tryptophan in the growth media, and we see that it's predominantly the high biomass plants have low-level auxin producers associated with them. If we go to the medium biomass plants, they're somewhat higher level auxin producers, and the distribution is wider. If we go to the low medium, the low auxin producing plants, you get a very wide distribution, wide distribution of auxin producings from very low to very high. So that was the one thing that stood out immediately, that there's certainly a difference in the amount of auxin produced by bacteria associated with either the high, medium, and low biomass plants. So there's some association there. If we looked at without tryptophan in the isolation media, however, it appears like almost all of them are associated with the low range of auxin production in the supernatant. So that was very interesting too. So auxin producers in high biomass wheat in the presence of tryptophan were mostly found at the low end of the scale, while auxin producers in the low biomass wheat with tryptophan were more widely distributed from the low to the high end of the scale. And then auxin producers without tryptophan for both high, medium, and low biomass wheat were distributed really at the low end of the scale. So it appears like auxin producers appear to be predominantly associated with high auxin producers appear to be associated with low biomass plants. Well, okay, so that was our finding with respect to the amount of auxin that is produced by individual bacteria, that there's a distribution, and those distributions differ among high and medium and low biomass plants. How about the number of auxin producers? We extracted 1,000 rhizobacteria, so we have sufficient numbers to examine this as well. And so what we did was, again, we have the high, medium, and low biomass categories. And then we have the average biomass in each of the categories represented here. And then these are the numbers of auxin producers that are found in either the plus tryptophan. In other words, these bacteria basically produce auxin only in the presence of tryptophan, not in the absence. These over here produce auxin only are facultative. In other words, they can produce auxin in the presence of tryptophan and also in the absence of tryptophan. Okay. This category over here, however, are auxin producers that produce auxin only in the absence of tryptophan. Okay. And if we look at the relationship of these numbers with respect to the biomass of plants, we can draw some interesting correlations. First of all, in this category where they produce auxin only in the presence of tryptophan, we didn't see any linear correlation between that and your biomass categories. Okay? No linear relationship. between the numbers of auxin producers detected exclusively with the plus tryptophan in the growth media. Okay. If we go to the facultative type auxin producers, we find that there is a negative linear relationship with an R-squared of about 0.85 between the numbers of auxin producers detected in the presence or in absence of tryptophan and biomass productivity. So that was interesting. There's a negative correlation there. If we go to this category, however, there was a very much stronger positive linear relationship between the number of auxin producers detected without tryptophan in the isolation media, okay, in the absence of tryptophan. And this one correlated much more strongly with our biomass categories, which suggest that those auxin producers that produce auxin in the absence of tryptophan are clearly associated with high biomass productivity. So there's a subset of auxin producers that may be more important for biomass productivity than all the other ones. Okay, so conclusions. Biomass production in the presence of tryptophan is more associated with the lower level auxin producers. Lower productivity in wheat in the presence of tryptophan is widely distributed between the low and high level auxin producers, and high biomass productivity in the wheat rhizosphere is highly associated with auxin producers that produce auxin without any tryptophan supplementation. So, our next step was to identify the auxin producers, and there's been a lot of literature in this area. And so we do have a library of 1,000 auxin producers, but we haven't quite yet sequenced all of them to identify them. So what we're doing right now is we're growing the bacteria in our media, then we're extracting the DNA and we're amplifying the 16S ribosomal gene, and then we're doing the sequencing and comparing them using two databases, both the BLAST NCBI database, BLAST N comparisons, as well as the ribosomal database project number 2, which is also a very fine database as well with many interesting tools for identification. And then the last step is once we've identified these, we want to look at what's in the literature. So we did a screening of the literature using the ISI database, Web of Knowledge, and then also for the earlier literature, an excellent review entitled Auxin by Frankenberger and Arshad, 1995. They cover a lot of information on much of the earlier literature, and so that was very valuable as well. So the data here is presented in this chart, and this is the number of auxin producers, and this is the number of ISI citations with the keywords of auxin, and this should auxin and the specific genera of the bacteria. Now we have them identified to the level of genera because with a PCR fragment of only about anywhere from 600 to 800, we don't have a lot of confidence in the species identification at that point. So anyway, what we find here is that the auxin producers in the wheat rhizosphere predominantly are Flavobacterium, Bacilli, Pseudomonas, genera as well, and a number of unknowns. Stenotrophomonas was another one. And so those are the most predominant ones in the rhizosphere of wheat. Okay, then if we looked at the literature, of course, the literature, Agrobacterium, a lot of literature in Agrobacterium, but that's understandable because it's highly used in a number of systems. Rhizobium, of course, most of the auxin literature for is based upon Rhizobium, Agrobacterium, and Pseudomonas, and also Azotobacter and a few others. But as far as wheat rhizosphere The major ones are basically Bacillus, Flavobacterium, Pseudomonas, of course, and then let's see, Pseudomonas, Flavobacterium, Bacilli. Yeah, and then we also found that there were a number of them where there were no references, a number of genera where no references to that particular for auxin production, and those included the Aminobacter, Brevondomonas, Calobacter, Dyadabacter, as well as Pseudoxanthomonas and Sphingopyxis. So there were a number of genera, so that basically expands our knowledge as far as the phylogeny of auxin-producing bacteria. And what we hope to do is, as we sequence more of this library, we'll be able to have a more complete understanding of the phylogeny of these auxin producers. My basic feeling for this is that almost maybe up to 60% of the bacteria produce auxin in the rhizosphere, so many of them. So it basically reflects what is found in the rhizosphere. A large proportion of them produce auxin. So the most abundant genera was Flavobacteria, Bacillus, and Pseudomonas, and then there were a number that were not previously known to produce auxin as well. Future, again, we're going to continue on identifying and characterizing these auxin producers, especially those positively associated with the biomass productivity, the 39 isolates. Those are the ones that we're most interested in. And then we're going to take those and test them as to whether or not they actually promote plant growth using a Leonard jar system, and then that will confirm whether or not they're plant growth promoters. What class of auxin producers actually produce or actually are associated with plant growth promotion versus pathogenesis? So our hope is to better characterize this community of bacteria that produce auxin in the rhizosphere of wheat. I'd like to acknowledge Mohammed Aladani, who's in the audience right now. He's really did a lot of the work, spent a lot of time late at night doing a lot of assays. And Roji Manandahar, she's been involved in a lot of the sequencing. Samantha Lovelace and Shraddha Vadvalkar, who's also been associated with the project. Are there any questions?
Any question for Dr. Anderson?
Yes.
I have several questions, sir.
Certainly.
So the product you use here to ask is a high producer is made in bacteria. So how you get rid of fungi?
Fungi? Well, when we do our dilution plating, okay, and we isolate the bacteria, basically we incorporate into the media a number of antifungal compounds to keep them from growing. And then, so basically in our dilution plating media, we basically have nothing else but just bacteria. Most of those antifungal compounds act on protein translation. So. Excuse me, I didn't hear that.
How do I get rid of more of the bacteria?
It's typically excreted from the bacteria. It's excreted. I don't know if it's uses a transporter or what, or if it's passively. I don't know how it is, but that's I think that's an area that people are interested in too.
Okay, my another question is, so you look at the high of biomass.
Yes. Correlate does well. Can you? Well, no. The high biomass actually had the lower the auxin producers that produce less auxin.
Okay.
The low biomass producers produced both low and high level of auxin. So the high level of auxin is generally produced by those low biomass plants.
Okay, so that means the bacteria produce a more inhibited plant growth,
is that right? It depends on the amount. Now, auxin is highly regulated in the plant. Okay, so if you overwhelm the auxin receptors, okay, you get negative growth results, okay, and that's the typical, the 2,4-D herbicide response. 2,4-D is an auxin also. You spray it on at high concentrations, you kill the plant. So basically what the plant tries to do is produce auxin at an optimal level, and that is fairly low concentration. Any more above the optimum will result in negative growth. So these high-level auxin producers associated with the low biomass plants are probably deleterious rhizobacteria. Okay, in other words, they inhibit growth. While those that are at the low level of auxin production, they produce just enough auxin to stimulate plant growth. In some way, there's still a lot of questions on how that happens and how you can stimulate growth by supplementing it with auxin produced by auxin-producing bacteria. How is that regulated between the bacteria auxin production system and the plant system? No one knows at this time. Yes. Yes.
Talking about above ground,
yes, it's above ground. I didn't want to do the roots, because when you isolate the rhizosphere from roots, there's a great deal of variability depending upon how much soil is clinging to the roots. So you never get a really good idea of the total biomass, okay, in the roots, unless you image it. That would be a good way to go.
Are just changing the root morphology or something?
The auxin producers typically increase the root growth and the number of fibrous roots. That's what they've been shown to do. In this system, we couldn't characterize it, because what we really wanted to do was extract the roots, and once you extract the roots, you kill the roots and you lose all that information. So in the future, we may try to do something like that. But that was a very good question.
Any other question for Dr. Anderson?
Yes.
Does auxin have an effect on the bacteria?
Oh, very good question. There's an excellent review by Spapen in 2007 that basically indicates that there is now evidence that auxin may be a signaling molecule between the bacteria as well. That they also influence quorum sensing as well. So that's an interesting area, but we don't know much about that.
Has it been shown that the auxin produced by bacteria can actually enter the plant?
Oh, yes, definitely. Many of them are endophytes. Many of them, yes.
So in this case, would the plant use the auxin that is producing by bacteria and then produce less on its own?
We don't know how that's regulated. That's a very good question, and nobody knows at this point how the...
What's the contribution of...
Yeah, what is the relative contribution of the bacteria to the plant, you know, in auxin production? How it's regulated, we don't know that yet.
Another question.
Yes.
Were you able to, or did you have some of this auxin-producing bacteria as a... Epiphytic bacteria?
You mean on the leaves? Or
yeah.
Yeah, we only extracted the roots. We were only interested in the rhizosphere, but most likely they're on the plant, the phyllosphere on the leaf tissue as well. I'm pretty sure of that, because auxin production appears to be general throughout many microorganisms. I would estimate about 60% of the rhizobacteria produce auxin if you supplement with tryptophan. But if you don't add the tryptophan, then you don't see, you might see only about 15% of all of them. So, but I would expect that they are. Yes?
Are there indications that there are other hormones produced similarly? And
oh, yes.
From the same microbes and the same tryptophan?
Yeah, auxin. Well, tryptophan is the primary source for auxin production. But if you look at the cytokinins, they are also important, and we did not examine any of these bacteria for cytokinin or gibberellin production, but bacteria are known to produce both cytokinins, gibberellin, and so there are other hormones and plant growth substances that might be interesting in this collection. That's right. Exactly. They grow together. One author indicates that you really need to treat the plant as a community of organisms. It's not just a plant, but it's also a community of bacteria associated with the rhizosphere. Yeah.
And the fungi, of course.
Fungi are very important. The mycorrhizae, very, very important. And all the other fungi, very, very important. But we've just focused on the bacteria. But you really need to work with bacteria as well as the other organisms and even the protozoa.
And then the next step would be how to encourage the
yes.
growth and development of those positive
right.
Microorganisms in order to generate better crops.
Exactly. And that's a very interesting area. And there's been a number of talks in yesterday's symposium on using humic acid substances, which may promote a different microbial composition. And then also a number of these bioinoculants or biofertilizers or biopesticides. So as we gain a greater understanding of the rhizosphere, we are going to be able to understand what constitutes a healthy rhizosphere better. And once we do that, we can influence plant growth. And that will have a major impact, in my opinion, on agriculture in the future. Yes?
Well, if it's the auxin that's having a positive effect on plant biomass, wouldn't it make sense just have the plant produce more auxin?
Yeah. How do you do that? It's a tightly regulated system. So how you engineer auxin synthesis, there are many components to auxin. To the auxin level. There's not only there's the component of the metabolism of auxin, okay, the synthesis of auxin, the transport of auxin from source to sink. Then you also have compartmentalization in vacuoles that can contribute to the effective amount of auxin. So it's a very complicated system, and to date we don't quite yet understand how it all works together to bring about that optimal level. Once we do, then maybe we can do something about it like you suggest.
I have one last question.
Sure.
Is the idea that the bacteria promote plant growth and that somehow this promotion of plant growth is beneficial to the bacteria somewhat?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because the plant will excrete carbon, termed rhizodeposits basically, excrete carbon that feed the bacterial community. In fact, it's been estimated up to 20% of the photosynthate is excreted through the roots of plants, most likely to feed this community. In exchange, this rhizosphere community contributes many things, such as higher efficiency in nutrient extraction. The mycorrhizae in particular are important. Protection against biotic stress, pathogens, and also plant growth substances. So it's more a community that has basically evolved to optimize plant growth. And how we culture that community has a major impact on plant growth itself and the inputs that we need to put into the agricultural system. So it's the rhizosphere can determine that very much if we understand what constitutes a healthy rhizosphere.
All right, give a hand to Dr. Anderson.
Thank you.